All right, we bring in the third base coach of the San Francisco Giants. He's the professor, and we have a lot of fun talking ball with Woe and Bill Lasky, as we'll do it tonight. Woe, how are you?
Marty, I'm great. I'm looking forward to talking with you and Bill this evening. We've got a beautiful day in the Bay Area tonight.
Yeah, well, we got to deal with the news of the day, and of course, we just have to keep waiting here, and the union has rejected the latest proposal and said, just tell us where to show up and how many games, and that's where we are now. So as a sport, I said I had a lot of joy watching the draft this week, but I think baseball, we need to get a little bit of some happiness in here somewhere along the way. Don't you agree?
Yeah, no, I thought you hit the nail right on the head there when you talked about the draft. I mean, it brings a smile to my face. You know, I didn't watch a lot of it, but I did see some highlights. You know, when kids get drafted and when their families around them and how excited they are, it makes you think back to, you know, when you were in high school or college or wherever you were drafted out of. And it was such a great time in your life. Your whole future's ahead of you. You know, to think to play professional baseball, you've been thinking about that since you were 8 or 9 years old. And it comes to reality. And for these guys in this draft, they were all top picks, right? 6 rounds or whatever it was. So they're in good position. They're getting some money to sign, and I'm sure they're chomping at the bit. They wish this COVID thing would get over like the rest of us so they could go play ball.
Yeah, it's not going away so fast. It doesn't know boundaries of states or summer or anything else. And it's spiking up in Arizona, California, Texas, and places that you may have to travel to. So I think things are still very much up in the air. And as you and I have talked about it, I think we just have to sit back and see what's going to happen. But my feeling is the health of yourself, the players, everyone connected with the game, and everyone in the country, that will determine what's going to happen no matter what the players and owners agree on.
I think you're right. You know, myself personally, I mean, I don't know how many weeks, you know, I think it was a few weeks ago we thought we'd have a decision on whether we were going to play or not, or an agreement. And the longer we wait here, you know, the worst things look for, as you said, Florida, Arizona, Texas. And those were the three cities that MLB was thinking about, you know, playing the season at, our spring training sites. And it's not looking as rosy now as it did, you know, a few weeks ago. So we're just going to have to wait and see, you know, when we get the agreement. But there, I'm sure there is concern for all the players and the owners. You know, they want to keep everybody healthy. And this thing is, you know, it depends where you sit on it, but it isn't going away, as you've said. And that's got to be a concern for everybody.
All right. That is our professor, Ron Wotus. Woe, you got to chat with a few people this week from River Islands. I was thrilled that happened out at the Priest Ranch Wine Tasting Room up in Yountville.
Yeah, you know, like everybody else, you know, we've been cooped up a little bit. And Lori, we said, let's go up to Yountville and get a coffee and a pastry from Bouchon and pick up some wine. And that's what we did. So we went up, and I went into Priest Ranch Winery, and we sat down, and I did a little tasting. And the couple next to us, Marty, they know both of us. We met them out at the Christmas party. We had Renee and Casey, and Ravi and Casey, and Renee and Sabrina. And these two couples, they live out in River Islands for a few years now. One of the couples came from Cupertino, the other one from Dublin. And Lori started talking to the girls there, and they were raving about the schools on how that, you know, how good the schools were, and the transition from, you know, teaching kids in class to teaching them at home because of the technology and how advanced these schools are. They are just so happy to be there. And the other thing that really struck me in the conversation is they went on and on about the sense of community. You know, they're with this COVID thing going on. We both know how much space they have out there with the lakes and the walking trails and, you know, the bike paths and the basketball courts. You know, they see their community out on the street all the time. And they said everybody's helping each other. They don't feel so isolated. So they had nothing but great things to say about River Islands. And they were wondering when you were going to go back up to see everybody, Marty.
I love it. Absolutely. I'm going to give Colleen a call on Monday and make a trip out there. And absolutely, I want to check it out. I'm a candidate for River Islands. I want to tell you, it's growing on me.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, they had great things to say. It was nice to talk with them.
I like it. All right. Let's bring in Bill Lasky. Bill, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, Marty and Ron. I just want to know how much tasting did Ron do when he was up there?
Well, you know, I went off my beaten path. I've had the reds. In this hot southern months, I don't drink much white wine, but I've been leaning towards the whites. So I did a tasting of whites, and I just one round of the whites because I'm still partial to the reds. So we stopped right there.
Well, I mentioned that the 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon is being featured by Priest Ranch Wine, so you'll hear me talk about that during the show. But I'm glad you're up there, glad that you got to see it, and I'm glad that we could be part of River Islands. We are absolutely going to take a trip up there. Well, a few things to talk about, just some of the things about baseball this week, and we didn't get to a couple of them last week, and I wanted to bring a couple up. And, well, one... You know, this day in baseball history is always so much fun. And you guys remember Steve Boros, who was the manager of the Padres? Remember him?
Sure. Yeah, vaguely. I don't remember him too well. Bill, he was probably more in Bill's era, wasn't he, Bill?
Yeah, he was there. He managed a few teams, but I do remember him in the Padres.
Yeah, very smart man, very smart man. And so on today's date, or a couple of days ago, there was a call the night before and the game, and it went against them, and he was just incensed about it. And this is now, we're back in 1984. He goes and gets a videotape of the call, and the call is clearly wrong. So he goes up to home plate with the videotape and hands it to the umpire, and of course you know what they do. They throw him out of the game before the game even starts. So it made me think of stuff like that, Woe, and I don't know, you've had your moments with the umpires over the years. We love Eddie Montague, and we tease him all the time about some of these things, but you ever have a situation like that where you had to deal with the umpire before the game or something like that?
Well, actually, Marty, it's funny you say that because I have. I think I told the story about Bruce Fromming calling me into the umpire's room. But I did something similar when we were playing the Dodgers, the Dodger series. So Dave Roberts was an outfielder for the Dodgers. And every time he'd go for a base hit bunt, what he did a lot of, he'd step on home plate. And right, Bill, you step on home plate when you bunt the ball, you're out. And I tell the umpires at home plate to look for it. And of course, that night he steps on home plate. Nobody makes a call. And I'm just livid. It's so obvious. So I go back to the video room. I get the photograph printed out of him making contact with the ball and his foot's right in the middle of home plate. And I tell Brandon Evans, one of our clubhouse guys, I said, send us over to the umpire's room. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen, but I didn't care. I was that upset that they weren't watching this. And so then, you know, I take the lineup card to home plate. I was hoping Boach was going to take it that night, but he never took it up until his last year here. So I got to walk the lineup card up, and they weren't too pleased with me. We'll put it that way. I stayed in the game, but they were not very happy.
Well, you know, Ron, you know, back when you're talking about the early 80s in my era, those umpires, you couldn't argue with them. They were one way. It was their way or no way. And with Boris doing that at home plate, the first thing out of 84 must have been a VHS tape he brought up there because I don't think they had CDs back then. That was the first thing I thought. And how in the hell did he get that up there at home plate if it was a picture or whatever? But I think any umpire in today's world even would throw him out if they tried to show him up the following day.
Well, what about today? If you come across a situation like that, how do you deal with it today?
You know, I think it's a little bit different today in the fact that the umpires have lost a little bit of their, I don't know, their dominance or control over the game, you know, because of video replay. Mm-hmm. I find that maybe it's because I'm out at third base and I'm talking to them more and getting to know these guys, and we have a much better relationship than I had when I was a bench coach screaming at them from the side. But, you know, I just feel like they're more rational, and because of the video replay, there's not as much arguing about calls and you missed it or you didn't, because we're going to the video replay, and it's changed quite a bit, the relationship, I think, with players and umpires dealing with the game. That's the way I felt it the last few years, Bill. I don't know what you've seen with these changes.
I just think, Ron, you know, when they developed the American League and National League Umpire Association, put them all together, I knew right then and there it was being a mixture of personalities, attitudes, just relationships broke up. And I think that has some of it, too, because you do get to know umpires. You get to know them being a third base coach. And they change so much. And I know they change the groups every year. They try to get the people to change. But I'm right there with you. There's no one set rule, because they know if they screw up, okay, the play will be turned over. I think there should be some kind of rationality where if they do have so many screw ups, just like this Angel Hernandez thing that's blowing up in baseball now. I think they need to step back, or they need to go back to AAA. There should be some kind of justification if there's so many mistakes that they need to step forward and do something to them, as a player does. If they mess up, they go to AAA. So I think umpires should have something like that.
Boy, that'll be interesting. Hey, the other part, we had fun with the draft, talking about that as I opened the show tonight, a lot of enthusiasm. And it made me think about this. These kids get drafted, and some of them, whoa, have never used a wood bat before. And I imagine you must see this with kids who come into ball now. They go to the Cape Cod League or something like that. It's required to use a wood bat. But I was just curious, do you use a wood bat as a kid, or do you ever use a metal bat? And what about kids coming in today? Do you have to make a transition with these guys, even defensively, where you play a wooden bat game as opposed to a metal bat game?
Yeah, that's a good question, Marty. I mean, and not as much defensively, but it is a big adjustment offensively. And I remember I messed around with a wood bat in high school here and there, not in games as much, because the aluminums were so much lighter and your sweet spot is so much bigger. You know, you could hit the ball on the handle with an aluminum bat and you could still hit a fairly decent line drive. You do it with the wood and, you know, the bat split in half. So, you know, as far as the total distance, it's not that big of a deal. They're very comparable, but there's a lot more hits in aluminum. And the big adjustment for the kids is when they grow up with an aluminum bat, you know, they don't have to get it started as much. You talk about separation where you get your hands started. You know, people call it a hitch or slight movement. Aluminum bats, their hands can be stiller because they're much lighter. You know, it's easier to get that bat through the zone, and it's easier to keep a shorter stroke. But now they get that wood in their hand, and the big adjustment was they need to get something going because the bat's heavier, and you can't, you know, you can't start with a dead stop with your hand. So it is hard to project. You know, not the scouts that have been around that watch these guys in college. You know, they've seen a million players, but it is an adjustment for the players and the projection on how well they will do with a wood bat.
Ron, I like the projection when you said when they use from aluminum to the wood, because then they're going to really feel it when those guys come in on their hands and they buckle those hands and they break that bat and their hands are bruised and their thumbs if they're not learning the right way to swing that wood bat. And coming right from college days, I mean, they're, when you're looking at some of these numbers they're putting up in that draft, and Marty, I'm glad you brought that up because I saw the excitement the same way you did. And I just relived all those little exciting days when you were coming up through high school and college with those things with your family. And it was really cool. I enjoyed watching that first day of the draft. But getting back to the wood bats, I think it is an adjustment for hitters. They're used to seeing a ball that may be halfway up the barrel taken off, and now it's an out with wood. So there is a difference there on both sides. And I don't think these hitters are going to take that long to adjust once they start getting the style of bat and the different ways the grain is. And, of course, it's all maple now. So I think that that's going to be a quick adjustment for any hitter coming from college or high school.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun, as I said, seeing the kids and the smiles. And my grandson Noah graduated from the 8th grade to 9th grade. And I said, what should I get him? How they maybe get him a wood bat. Start swinging a wood bat. You know, it's time. He's old enough to start swinging a wood bat. But we had a lot of fun with the joy with him this week as well. Hey, one thing we like to do on the show, and that is spotlight a coach and then a couple of players and get your guys' recollection of it. And it's really fun for me to go back and say, boy, I forgot this guy was a coach. And I'm going to start with Ron Peronoski, guys. This is a left-handed relief pitcher for many, many, many years, coach with the Dodgers. He played in L.A. as well. And all of a sudden, 1995, they let him go, and he ended up being part of the Giants minor league system and then eventually getting up to the big leagues. And, whoa, you were here with him. Ron Peronoski, the left-handed reliever. I know Bruce Jenkins enjoyed watching him as a Dodger, and he was quite a left-handed relief pitcher, the Twins as well.
Yeah, he was, Marty. I mean, not only was he a great pitcher, but he had a great reputation as a coach. You know, he had all those stud starters. You know, I mentioned them last week, and Hershiser and the rest of the guys over there. I can't remember all of them now. Bill probably remembers the pitchers he had, but he had some real good pitchers over there, and we talked about him helping Russell Ortiz. But I loved Perry from day one when I saw him. 98, I was a third base coach my first year in the big leagues, and I remember walking up to him in the minor league fields when we in spring training and introducing myself, and we hit it off, and I think it was because we're both Polish Americans, right? Peronoski. Matter of fact, he's in the Polish National Polish Hall of Fame. So we had a lot of fun with that, talking to each other, and was an outstanding pitching coach. I really enjoyed his stories about Tommy Lasorda and all the winning years they had there in L.A., listening to him talk about how things went down over there. Of course, Joey Malfitano, another great coach, was part of that group as well. And the last thing I'll say about Perry, well, two things. You know, he had the strings out, Bill. You remember, he was big on pitching down and away. Because where do you want to go with a pitch, Bill, when you're behind in the count and you want to limit the damage and you need a strike? You can't throw it down the middle. You got to master that down and away pitch where you get the least amount of damage. And he was one of the first guys to have the strings in the bullpen. He put strings there in that location where you wanted to throw the ball. And he hit that hard. It's like today our pitching coaches have strings for, you know, the high fastball. They like to use that high fastball. But Perry was known for that. And the last thing he was known for was telling me to get a pair of red pants. Because when we go on our flights on travel day, if we spilt the wine falling asleep on the plane, it wouldn't stain the pants. Or nobody could notice that you spilt the wine.
What a veteran move. Just a veteran move right there from a pitching coach.
That's right.
Well, I tell you what, Ron, I didn't know you were Polish because I'm 50% Polish, so I know we're Polish brothers now. And on the other hand, you took my thunder away from him being in the Polish American Hall of Fame, because that was one of the things how he introduced himself to me when I first got to know him. And what an intelligent pitching coach. And you threw some names. I throw Fernando Valenzuela. He was such a teacher to him. Jerry Royce, Bob Welch, Dave Stewart. I mean, he had a ton of good pitching coach. And he was there for 14 years. And I'm glad Marty touched on him. He was really a hell of a reliever back in the day with the Dodgers. I just looked on while you were talking, 70 games and 69 games in the 60s. And just a really good reliever, good numbers. And the thing about it, Ron Peronoski was one of the best pitching coaches around in the 80s and the 70s to lead the Dodgers to many World Series. And you know what? Him and Tommy Lasorda were best friends. He was on his hip all the time. Sure, they had arguments, but, you know, when you look at the two top head coach and pitching coach back in those, or manager, it would definitely be Lasorda and Peronoski, because both of those guys worked very well. And, you know, tip your hat to him. He went from the Dodgers, and now he's with the Giants. He's been with the Giants for many years. And the education that he gives kids coming through the minor leagues, it's priceless, because, you know, you start talking to the top 10 pitching coaches ever, and I would say Ron Peronoski is in that top 10.
Well, do you ever see him anymore? Is he around?
No, you know, I haven't seen him in a few years, and I haven't spoken to him. You know, there was a lot of years there. He'd come to spring training, and, you know, even when he was, you know, off the major league staff, he'd still come in the spring and help out. But it's been 3 years since I've seen Perry, and I hope he's doing well. He lives down there in Florida, and he'd be a good one to reach out and give a call to.
Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah. 737 games. Now, you mentioned the strings. That goes back to Branch Rickey, believe it or not, in Dodgertown.
Wow.
He started in with the strings. He would make that box, and you'd have to throw it within that box. That's an old Dodger trick going back to 1948. when Branch Rickey started that. And the other thing is when Peronoski got let go by the Dodgers, it wasn't pleasant. The question was Lasorda, whether he protected him or not. So who knows? But another anniversary that may apply to this, I'll ask you this question since we're talking about a bullpen coach. In 2006 or 8 or so, Larry Rothschild of the Cubs used a cell phone to call the bullpen to communicate. And now Peronoski's an old school guy. Now, I don't think they had cell phones when he was around, but how did you guys communicate with the bullpen in those days?
Yeah, well, you know, not every dugout had the phone, you know, that was you could call down there. And so you had always had to have hand signals. And so I'll never forget as a bench coach, you know, with Perry talking about Peronoski, we never used a cell phone. I mean, but we did use walkie-talkies. And when the walkie-talkie didn't work or they didn't have a phone, then you have to give hand signals. And I'll never forget my first year in 98, Perry was the pitching coach, and Juan Lopez from Puerto Rico, you know, he understood English very well, speaks good English, but he couldn't understand Perry. Perry would call down and go, "Give him up." And, you know, and Lopey would say, hey, whoa. He goes, "You got to give me a signal. I can't understand Perry, and I can't ask him to say it again because he'll start yelling." So I had to come up with hand signals to Juan Lopez, and, you know, Juan would hang up the phone, say, "Okay." He'd look down at me, and, you know, our tallest reliever, I'd put my hand way up. Our shortest reliever, I'd go way down low. Or our heaviest reliever, I'd put my arms out, like, give me the big guy. And Lopey was so happy when we had those hand signals because he couldn't understand Peronoski, and that's how we did it.
That's funny.
And you know what, Ron? That's how they used to do it all the time. The pitching coach and sometimes in the minor leagues always symboled different guys in the bullpen. And I'll never forget we had a African-American pitcher had a fro, and that was one of the signs. The guy would just put his hands over his head like a big fro. I mean, we had all different ones, the chubby guys that go around the belly, holding the belly, and the tall guys, like you said, would reach real tall. I mean, it was funny, and then you'd get a couple guys, me, him, no, you. And then, that's how it always was in the back. Nobody knew anything back then. It was like guessing who he wants up, and then, oh, yeah, it's you, and then all of a sudden you're in the game. But that's sort of the fun part about it when you didn't have phones and all the communication they have now. But that's exactly how they did it.